Monday, March 4th, 2024. Roll call?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Kalina?
Here.
Commissioner Thompson?
Here.
Commissioner Olson?
Here.
Commissioner Nelson?
Here.
Do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Approval of agenda. Does anyone want to make a motion for approving tonight's agenda?
I'll move the agenda.
I'll second.
Agenda has been approved for the night.
Mr. Chair, make sure we take a vote on the, I think we had a motion and a second, did we?
Oh, sure.
Take a call for a vote? So you just say all in favor?
All in favor, say.
Aye.
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 Call for all opposed. Call for all opposed.
All opposed?
Nay.
No.
No.
Motion carries.
There you go. Just as a matter of order, and I know it's your first time chairing a meeting, Mr. Chair, just, you'll call for a vote. But before you, when you hear a motion and a second, then just be sure to call for any further discussion before calling for a vote.
Okay. Next on the agenda, public hearing.
And Mr. Chair, we do have one public hearing tonight. This one was one that was initiated by staff. Saw some issues with the zoning code that we wanted to tackle as soon as we could. There's sort of a wide range of things here that is being discussed, but a few of the things are sort of highlighted in my memo. So if we could go to that memo. It's not exactly right in order here, so I apologize. It's later on in the agenda as it's on the actual action items down the line here, so I'll just go down to that. One of my little hats I wear is as the zoning administrator, so I get a lot of questions that come my way on various issues surrounding the interpretation of the zoning code. So I'm forced to kind of make some of those decisions by myself, and when they get real tricky, then we bring them back to you and try to navigate through those. But otherwise, you know, oftentimes there needs to be a decision made. The code is what it is, and I'm sort of the arbiter of that code. And so one of the things that I ran up against recently here is highlighted here, which is that this table of allowed uses is a very important document, which we use. And as you can see here, this single-family attached dwelling units with up to two dwelling units per building, so that's describing essentially a duplex in the household living uses, is under the category R2 and not in R2A, meaning it would not be allowed in R2A, but it would be allowed in R2, which is exactly the opposite of what I think most people understand about our zoning districts. And what we just approved, a rezoning to allow a duplex by rezoning this thing to R2A, that was the Moore property, the former Robin Moore property up in the northeast part of town. And so this is kind of the one main thing I wanted to correct right away. With the way it is currently, this allows duplexes in most of town where it, you know, with 100-foot lots and things that we weren't necessarily, you know, when you read the intent of the zoning district in the code, it's clearly not the intent of the R2 zoning district to allow for multifamily type dwellings.
So this is just a misplaced letter.
It's really, I feel like it's just a typo, yeah, that somehow, you know, lied dormant for a lot of years because we haven't had a lot of applications for duplexes, right? And suddenly it came to light that this was probably in the wrong spot. So that's sort of item number one, if I can keep things simple. Mm-hmm. Also kind of looked through some things about the same instance, this duplex that we had, if you recall, you approved a rezoning of that property to R2A in order to allow a duplex. And then what we looked at, there was a number of things with the table of setbacks. So I want to go to that here next. And as you look at this table here, you'll see that, so R2 again is sort of that 100-foot wide lot, sort of the larger, more suburban type development lots, minimum lot size of 15,000 square feet, 100-foot wide, 35-foot setbacks. This is most of Hunter's Crossing and most of Pheasant Marsh, the southern kind of part of town. Another vast neighborhoods of R2 in town, right? And then we also have a large contingent of R2A in town, where it's a little bit smaller lots, still very, very nice sized suburban lots at 80 feet wide, a little bit shorter setback in the front, and then a smaller lot size minimum. But what this brought up was that this really reads R2A single family, and it says something along the lines of residential. And what it doesn't differentiate between is whether there's detached or attached, and then we get into the definition of what is a single family attached versus a single or a two family attached. So there's a very minutia definitions here between what's a two family, which is like a duplex, versus a single family attached, which is what we might call a twin home. And those definitions really probably require us to think through what those setbacks and minimum lot sizes should look like. And I left them all blank here because there's no immediate need to change these. There wasn't this Moore property did not require these things necessarily to be laid out. It just required me to kind of look at this and say, no, you meet all the requirements anyway. If you recall, that home is kind of centrally placed in that one large 1-acre lot, so it doesn't. No setback requirement issues there. There's no square footage of the overall lot issues there. So it kind of meets all the setbacks sort of by accident just because it's on that existing 1-acre lot. But it just brought to light that there's some things that we need to discuss there in terms of lot size, setbacks, and those type of things that really should be different for the various types of homes within R2A. So I wanted to discuss that a little bit tonight just to bring that to your attention. Again, the goal, I think, of tonight's public hearing is to see if there's anyone out there that has any opinions on some of these things, and then from there, take that and flesh out what are the concerns and bring back to you a better set of, fill-in-the-blanks here for you in terms of what setbacks and minimums might look like for these types of homes. Then finally, again, I sort of took a let's just talk about it stance at first, but there are issues again with in terms of the definitions of certain items, and get to that here. So for multifamily uses, as I mentioned, there's a lot of different terms that are used interchangeably, and it's pretty clear sometimes that that's not meant to be used in that context. So we have a number of definitions here, such as dwelling unit, single-family dwelling, attached, single-family dwelling, detached, two-family dwelling, multiple dwelling, which is more like an apartment, duplex, again, which is not a two-family dwelling, but it's a single-family attached. The term building came into question. If you look back at the table, it said there's a minimum square footage for the building. Well, it was clear that that really meant the building, not each unit, right? But that wasn't necessarily clear in other parts of the definition that it looked like we were talking about a minimum for each unit. And so there was some discrepancies there. And just the term apartment, again, we kind of reference it in terms of a multiple dwelling. Other times we don't. So again, we don't have these redlined up for you at this point in time, but wanted to just kind of draw your attention to those so that you have a chance to study those sections of the code over the course of time here. And then auto repair as well. This kind of stemmed from some of the things things that have gone on with the Max Storage facility. Max Storage is up and running, they're starting to lease up, and we've had some questions about some of their potential tenants and whether or not they fit the zoning. And as you saw last meeting, we were able to approve some of those based on a little bit different definition we used, again, that term same or similar. We found them to be same or similar to machine and repair shops, and that was fine. But even since that time now, we've had another application, which is just, again, just a bit outside of what we decided was same or similar last time. So we decided an auto detailer was same or similar, and we decided a person who is sort of outfitting, taking a stock vehicle and outfitting it for public safety, so adding some lights and sirens and stuff like that. Those would all be same or similar to machine and repair shops and not auto repair. Well, we now have an auto glass company that may be looking at being in one of these bays, and whether or not, again, is that same or similar to that, or is it more same or similar to auto repair? And I think what we are getting at here is that auto repair, the reason it's carefully enumerated in your table of allowed uses is that it can often be noisy, smelly, dangerous in terms of what they're storing and those type of things. So it has a number of things that you want to carefully regulate. But we keep getting these little businesses that really touch around the edges of auto repair. You know, I think in terms of the auto repair we want to be careful about regulating is the kind that, you know, has a hydraulic lift and, you know, is underneath there with a wrench and oil spilling on them and knuckles are busted and, you know, those type of things. And I so that dirty, noisy operation, right? And these other uses are sort of much more, much less chance for issues with the neighbors and issues with the public in general, right? They're quieter, they're cleaner, they're less intrusive to the neighborhood. So my intent, again, is to bring back some language that carves out a few of these things and lays out a number of uses that are around auto repair, but that are not, we don't need to regulate as closely as auto repair. So hopefully we can bring something like that back again to you next time.
Mr. Chair, Mark, one of the distinctions for me is when you talk about auto repair, it's auto engine repair versus body work. I mean, that's the easiest way to say it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
You consider those both to be the same or similar?
So I think there's, it sounds like a great definition off the top of your head, right? But then I started to think about those same things, like when you say body, do you mean brakes? You know?
Tires?
Right, right. So I think okay. Tires and brakes start to get into that, again, noise, grease, mm-hmm. You know, type of stuff where you go, well, a guy's going to probably have a wrench, right? What do you call it? A pneumatic wrench.
Impact
wrench. Those are noisy. You're going to have grease and those type of things that can get into the sewer. And where some of these other things don't involve some of those issues, right? So just to say engine repair, gosh, you know, and I didn't even think about even opening up the subject of electric vehicle repair and what all the things that might go along with that too, right? So, but that's, you're on the right track, Bruce. I think that's what we're trying to do is draw that line somewhere. And I think the best option might just be to simply enumerate those things. Mm-hmm. We've got a handful of examples. I want to look through some other cities and what they've got enumerated. Mm-hmm. I know Paul even pulled up Los Angeles's city code and there was still gaps in that one for a large city like that. So I think it's something we want to do carefully and make sure we don't unnecessarily make complicated people's lives that are just trying to do these small niche businesses. So
because body repair in and of itself can be noisy.
Right, and there, that's what I meant to get back to, is that you're talking about body. Well, you know, adding pinstripes is different than pulling out dents, sanding down paint jobs, mm-hmm. having a paint booth. All those types of things are much different in terms of the risks to neighbors and the those type of things. So lots to think about there. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I think I've kind of gone through the highlights of my memo, and I would encourage you to open the public hearing and take any public comment on these issues.
We will open the public hearing now at $650.
Sounds good.
Does anybody have any comments to make in the public hearing? Do we just, should we just keep the public hearing open, or?
You can, Mr.
Discussion,
Chair.
Or?
You know, I don't anticipate, I haven't heard from anyone. It's up to you,
kinda,
but.
It seems like it's more or less clerical kind of stuff that's.
Yeah, yep. And we can certainly, it's up to you, but otherwise you would just call for a motion to close the public hearing if you want, or we can wait till there. So we do have an action item later in the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
If you'd like to wait till then to close the public hearing, you can certainly do that.
Okay.
Okay.
Let's wait for now then.
Sure. So with that then, Mr. Chair, I'd encourage you to move on to the next item on our agenda. Under awards and presentations.
Awards and presentations. Let's move on to request for zoning code modifications, chapter 156, agricultural district requirements. Mr. Chair?
Yeah, you're the Mr.
Chair. Oh, I'm not.
Mr. Administrator, whatever you want to call me, just don't call me late for dinner.
Mr. Mark, what is the agenda for this one?
So, Mr. Chair, the item that we have in front of us now is, we called it a code modification request, I'm not exactly sure if that's the correct characterization of it, but we had a resident in town who wanted to see if we would consider doing something to allow some farm animals on a larger piece of land that he owns, where the current zoning code does not allow those animals. And given some of the special circumstances surrounding his property, staff felt that that was something worth bringing to your attention and seeing if there was something we could work out. So in a nutshell, I think, as I understand it correctly, the resident would like to have a couple of goats. And again, our city code allows bees and it allows chickens, but it does not allow goats. And so unless you are zoned R1 agricultural, and the minimum zoning, the minimum size for a lot in the ag district is 10 acres. And this resident has about 4 acres in all told here, and outlined in red. And so a couple of options that we presented in order to achieve the idea of having some goats would be that we could consider a zoning change. So you could just say, let's change the R1 district minimum to a 4-acre lot, and or 3.9, or whatever you wanted to do. And that is certainly still an option, and we could explore that option. A couple of the complications that come with that are that, first of all, one of the things that would protect us there is that even if you change that zoning code to say, yes, you could have a lower minimum lot size to be agricultural, there's only a few parcels in town that are currently zoned R1, and so anyone else that wanted to join in that party would have to actually come to you for a rezoning request, right? And so you could simply deny that request for a rezoning. So that is one sort of simple and fast way to do this. One of the dangers, I'll call it, of that is that there is a possibility that the assessment, so the city assessor could look at that and see, okay, now we have lots that are eligible for agricultural uses, even though they're not zoned that way. There could be an interpretation there that use, especially if the person is still sort of actively cultivating the land or something like that, could be looked at as something that would be a downgraded use category, and that they could lower their taxes by applying, you know, calling the assessor and say, hey, you know, my acreage is in line with the zoning for agriculture. I think that's probably not something to hang your hat on and be too worried about. You know, the other thing is that a city council could rezone areas without asking those folks to. I mean, you don't have to, not everything would have to come through the planning commission. City council could rezone that if they saw that, oh, this isn't going to be developed for a while, let's rezone it to agricultural. So that is still an option. There are a limited number of lots in town of residential zoning that are even over 4 acres. So this is a pretty, I think, what was it, about 6 or 8 lots, maybe somewhere in that neighborhood that would even qualify if they were to come before you. So again, that is an option. So this is just a reminder of what the, in our table of allowed uses, what is allowed here. You see crop production and vegetable gardening, produce stands for products raised on the premises, tree nurseries and sod farms, and then horses, livestock, and fowl not exceeding one, essentially one horse or livestock animal per acre or three fowl per acre. And you'll see in, later in what we're talking about an animal unit. Essentially an animal unit or is one horse or one cow. It's basically like 1,000 pounds of animal. there's some definitions in the Minnesota Department of Health's rules about wells regarding that. So our code happens to talk about, not exceeding one horse or livestock animal. Again, would that be a cow or some other large animal? So those are the uses that are currently in the R1 agricultural zone. So then what would have to happen too is if you were to make that code change, then the resident would have to apply to rezone back to R1. And again, so without that code change, this option is not available, right? They can't just ask to be rezoned because they could, and you could grant that, but then their lot would be a non-conformity. They wouldn't be able to allowed to use because their lot would not meet the minimum requirement for the district. So again, this is sort of part of that is that one and two almost kind of go together, right? You have to have both, not just one of those. And then the other option we explored is an interim use permit. The reason the staff is sort of leaning in this direction is that, it is, if you read through our comp plans and all that kind of stuff, the ultimate goal here is to eliminate, it's not the goal to eliminate agriculture. The goal is to make sure that agricultural land remains in a way that can easily be redeveloped at some point in time when they're ready to develop and when the development pressure comes to do that. So we don't want to have agricultural uses, doing things that make it harder to redevelop that land at some point in time. So an interim use permit kind of acknowledges the temporary nature of this, in that we don't want to establish a big giant farm here on a 4-acre lot and then have people develop around it and complain about the farm on 4 acres. So you would sort of look at some of the things that you might want to have as conditions here. So an interim use permit would allow you to kind of apply some conditions. And so we've outlined some of those things that you might consider. And again, that would be sort of staff's recommendation is to go this direction. And the reason we like this too, again, is that it's temporary and it has some triggers in it that would make it expire and go away. And the last three there are kind of along those lines, which is it would expire after if there were any complaints from neighbors, right? We said multiple because obviously we don't want to just make it expire after one, but if there were multiple complaints, then we could talk about what that means. But, if we get calls constantly from neighbors saying, oh, the place stinks and it's, I don't like this and that about it. So it puts the burden on the resident to make sure that they're being good to the neighbors. Expires when any adjacent neighbor's property further subdivides. So part of the unique nature here is that they're surrounded by, on the south and east, by large lot, 40 plus acre farms. And then on the north side, they've got a pretty good sized lot. And then the residential subdivision to the west is a long ways across a pretty swampy area, right? So we say if any adjacent neighbor further subdivides, so if the lot to the north decides they're gonna subdivide, the lot to the east or south goes to a developer, we'd want that to then revert back. And then, we said number 7 here would expire with any sale of the adjacent property, and that's because some of the conditions we're talking about here require the signature of the adjacent owner. The signature of the adjacent owner is something we don't typically talk about in terms of zoning code. We try to avoid that because it's temporary, right? I mean, the owner of an adjacent property might say, yeah, no problem, put a fence over here. Well, when that owner goes away and there's a new owner, they shouldn't be held to what the previous owner decided it was okay for the property next to them, right? So we want to make sure that we don't have that issue. I think number seven could certainly be negotiated to say something along the lines of the owner has, or the permit will expire, say, 60 days after the sale of the property, so that you give some time for the person to go out and seek the signature of the new owner, see if that new owner is okay with the condition. Might be something like that. So otherwise, the rest of these restrictions are just meant to kind of keep some buffer around the animals. And I think that can be easily done on this piece of property. It's large enough to do that. And I think given the circumstances that it's adjacent to other farmland, both in our city and outside our city, I think lends itself to an interim use permit that, you know, again, is sort of a special condition just for this property.
So here's a good question for you, Mark. Would the IUP also expire with the sale of the said property as well?
So, unlike conditional use permits, mm-hmm. Interim use permits don't run with the land. So conditional use permits stay stuck to that piece of property. This one you can issue to a person and not necessarily the property. So, yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chair? Mark, one other question. I noticed on this interim use permit there's no timelines. Would an alternative be setting a timeline of 5 years, and then after 5 years you have to go back and ask for it to be renewed?
Certainly that's an option as well. So it could be, would have to be either or, it could be and. You could put that as an additional condition. So our attorney will always tell you that an interim use permit needs to have either a date certain or an event certain expiration. And so what we've outlined here is some event certain.
Event, okay.
You know, but you can also have, he says either, meaning you have to have one or the other, but you can also have both. So you can say either of these things or 5 years, whichever comes first, kind of a thing.
On item seven, what notification is required here? Would the person buying some adjacent property be aware of this?
Yeah, it's a fair question. I think if there was an agreement that, or a acknowledgement form that someone signed saying, I'm okay with this, I would think that'd be something they'd want to disclose to the new buyer. But I think that's why we have this condition, is to protect that new buyer, right, from maybe that disclosure doesn't get made or they didn't understand it. And then all of a sudden you move in and you go, oh, jeepers, what's this all about? My neighbor's got goats. And this protects that new owner and says, you know, you don't have to accept that condition. You can let that expire. So
I think the other thing that's, one thing that's got a good going for it is the fact that it's adjacent to all good organics.
Yep. Yep. Yeah, the neighbors, I believe, have goats.
Yeah, they do have goats, yes.
Yeah. So in many ways, this is sort of just a continuation of that land use, right?
What's the next steps?
So that's a great question. So I'll call him the applicant, is here, and you can certainly hear from him if you wish. So this is not a public hearing, and we do not have an active application. So this would be, the next step would be, if you're sort of all in agreement, this is sort of a concept plan review. Mm-hmm. If you're all sort of in agreement that this is the right direction, you'd sort of nod your head and give the applicant or the potential applicants your warm, fuzzy feeling, mm-hmm. and they'd go back and confer and say, yeah, let's go ahead and do this. They'd apply to us for an interim use permit. We'd publish for a public hearing. You'd have a public hearing at your next meeting, and you'd take action at that point in time.
Okay.
So tonight's just about a discussion, talking through some of the potential conditions, trying to give the applicants as much information about what you're thinking as we can. So,
do you want to hear from the applicant at all?
I would. Yeah. Okay.
Matt, would you like to?
Sure. For those that don't know you, I'm Matt Montaigne. Live at 6709 Centerville Road. You want to pull up property? We kind of fit where we're at. We're just kind of that odd spot where, again, growing up, it was all farms behind us. This actually property was farmed then as well. It's kind of transitioned over the years as soon as the development behind, you know, again, just with the homes that are on there. We meet the setbacks as is, except for the neighbor to the north, which, again, was the reason that Mark and I had talked about getting permission from the north. From the south, our setback based on the new pens that our neighbors to the south did will actually be farther away to the development than what ours are for it. Other than that, we meet each one of them. Again, we're not on city water, so again, it's one of those other things that our little area down to the south, we're just kind of that undeveloped rural location that it's at. And again, if you go to the east, you'll notice that, again, it's still the Broussard Vickers farm then as well. But again, the setbacks and everything like that that we meet for it, again, putting it through the IUP versus going with the rezoning, I do understand with the rezoning, the other people, again, multiple structures, tax value, stuff like that. Going with the IUP, being able to make that work out will be just fine for each one of them. Our setbacks and everything like that are all set for each one. Really, we don't see any hazards or conditions that we're going to run into. Again, we're not really looking to put a feedlot in. We're not looking to have manure storage, all the other stuff for it. Again, looking to be a small-scale item for it. And then with that, the only change that you will kind of see is, I know County did redo the ditch that was all through here. This previously was open. It was all farmed as corn, soybeans. They did a rotation. Cardinals used to farm all those ones for it, but again, the good spot for it, this is all swamped back through here, and it goes right through here. So this is usable spot now that the county has actually dredged that Rice Creek watershed, went through the last 2 years and cleaned up both the drainage on each one. But again, the setbacks and stuff like that, we're able to meet on each one. Again, we don't feel like we'd be an impedance on any of our neighbors. And again, because of the small scale, we're not going to see anything from our neighbors. But again, having those in there, one, the complaints that go out, we'd be able to address that. And then two, again, not looking to put up multiple barns, not able to put in, you know, hundreds of animals or anything like that. A small scale operation, which would pale in comparison to the one to the south of us.
Matt, you're familiar with the 7-8 conditions in the interim use permit. Are you okay with those?
As written, yes. I guess the only question on that one would be, again, when you talk about 7 having a deadline, depending on the animals that are going through, again, we're looking at goats for it, again, setting a deadline of 5 years for it. I know the neighbors to the north, again, if they sold, I'd be hopefully be able to purchase that instead versus, and then, again, I'd have the 10 acres anyways. But, again, having a deadline of just a year or a timeline for it, based on the duration of an animal's living conditions, they should live longer than that anyways. Having a sale or something like that is set in just because you know that it's there, you know that there's going to be major changes around the area. Putting in a deadline of a date, just because you don't know what the condition of the animals will be. Hey, if it lives to be 12 years old, you don't want one of those to all of a sudden, hey, I have to rehome you just because, let's say they sold it to their son or daughter and they were fine with it. Again, I'd like to go against having a date versus an expiration based on a sale of property just because of the duration of an animal.
Good. Thank you.
What would your recommendation be on a date then? Number of years?
I wouldn't have one. I'd say with sale of a property. Mm-hmm. And again, with that, if the next person's able to do that, sign it off again and just continue for that.
Okay.
Same thing, because again, if it would be myself to purchase it, someone that we know will purchase it, someone that's all for it, or someone that even wants to do it, maybe they're all for it then as well.
Sure.
Anybody else have any other questions? Okay. Thank you, Matt.
Thank you much. Appreciate the time.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, what we'll do is we'll bring this, we'll work with the applicant to get an application, and if they're moving forward with a formal application, we'll get a public hearing scheduled. I believe that'll be able to happen at your next Planning Commission meeting if the calendar works out, which I think it will, so.
What do we do for now at this point?
There's no action required at this point.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chief.
Okay, next up is old business, and there is none. So we'll bring up new business, zoning code modifications, Chapter 156, residential zoning district requirements.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, what we're sort of asking tonight from you is a sort of a partial move forward, and that was to change that table of allowed uses based on what I had redlined up there. So if you'll look at our requested action tonight, it's a motion to recommend the adoption of changes to the table of allowed uses as presented. The other changes we discussed, we'll come back to you at a next meeting or so for a little bit more in-depth review, but we wanted to get that one clarified because we've got an active building permit waiting for that one. So we wanted to make sure we got that cleared up as soon as we could. So,
do we need to discuss anything first?
So
I don't have any issues with any of them. Do anybody else?
No.
Is anybody ready to make a motion to recommend adoption?
I'll make a motion.
Looked like Russ was.
I'm just sorry, do we have a public hearing still open?
Oh, we do.
Oh, very good, Mr. Chair, so if you want to make one last call for public comment.
One last call for public comment on this issue? If none, we will close the public hearing.
I would ask, generally speaking, we could, the chair can open one, but we should have a motion to close the public hearing.
I'll move we close the public hearing.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Now we can move to the action item to actually adopt or recommend adoption of the changes.
I'll motion to adopt the changes. Or am I supposed to do that?
No, that's great.
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
And Mr. Chair, just to be clear, the motion was to recommend adoption of changes to table of allowed uses as presented?
Correct.
Ms. Klein, is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And Mr. Thompson, is that correct?
Yes.
Very good.
All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Good.
Concept review. Old Mill Estates, third edition.
So, just as background here, what we, our city code requires developers to come forward with a sketch plan for any proposed development. That's just to kind of flesh out any major problems right off the bat. It's a very informal process. It doesn't cost them anything. It doesn't cost us anything. We don't engage our consultants or anything like that. And so what we've got in front of you tonight is a sketch plan of what we would call Old Mill Estates third edition. As you'll note, that was, as was noted in the background information here by the developer, that this was always part of the plan. And I feel bad. I should have probably pulled up the old plan that kind of showed this as part of that. But we'd always identified this area out to the east that has some sort of additional upland area.
It's a lot of swamp, too.
There's a lot of swamp there, yep. But there's enough developable area out there that the developer has always wanted to try to make a go of it and put some housing out there. And so he is proposing that at this point in time. As you saw in the narrative there, you know, the first edition was this cul-de-sac up top, and that's Old Mill Court. And then the second edition was the development of Laramie Lane here. This is this street here, which then connects down to Revoir Street. And what we did here on purpose was that Lot 8, so Lot 8 is right here of Block 1 of the second edition. If you, you probably can't see very clearly here, but it encompasses a lot of area. It encompasses all this here, up and over, all the way over here, all the way down here. So Lot 8 is several acres, and it's got a building pad on it that lines up with all the other lots, and looks like, well, why does Lot 8 have all that land attached to it? And that was done very purposefully, because if we had allowed Lot 8 to just be platted as a normal size lot, and then we would have had this other area as sort of outlot for future development, which is very common when we have multi-phase developments that just sort of leave an outlot for future redevelopment. But what we were afraid of is that the cost to redevelop this might be prohibitive, and that the wetland, crossing that big wetland might be cost prohibitive, and or the wetland folks might just not allow it at all. And so what we didn't want this to happen was that this property would go tax forfeit and end up in the possession of the city, and then all of a sudden you got this big chunk of land that is kind of not worthless, but it's close to worthless, and then we got to sort of maintain it. And so we attached it to Lot 8, knowing that Lot 8 has a pretty good value on it by just being a buildable lot, and just made sure that we understood that we would not get it back tax forfeit, or if we did, at least we would be able to do something with it because it's got a buildable pad on it. So Lot 8, as was mentioned, has not been sold or built on yet, and it's sort of the last lot that has not been sold. So the developer is here to ask your opinion of a replat of Lot 8 into four total lots, so that's sort of three additional if you want to think of it that way. And that sketch is right here. And
now in this sketch, what would be considered Lot 8 in that one?
So the old lot eight here is this guy right here, which is lot one.
Okay.
And actually what I'm gonna do, I'm gonna pull up a different drawing. Bear with me here. Got a little bit more of a cartoon drawing of it too that I made. My put my kindergarten skills to test here, so I'll be right with you here.
Looks like access will happen off that, the extension. What used to be a roundabout at the end of that one road?
I will try to further explain here. So here I've got kind of hatched in blue, what is wetland. And so what you're looking at here is Laramie Lane. So no, access will not come off of the cul-de-sac. Access would be this red area here, which is the proposed driveway. So come off that bend in Laramie Lane.
No, I was thinking of the old cul-de-sac that was on the road that went north.
Sort of in, right at that area, right?
Yep.
So Laramie Lane now eliminated that cul-de-sac and,
yep.
and bends down there. So access would just come off that corner area there. It would just be a shared driveway. I've got it highlighted red here because we've discussed with the applicant the need to maybe have some fire access back here. Mm. And so we can get into that in a minute. But what you're seeing here is the unhatched area, outlined in green here, is the upland area. And that's where you would have the three new building pads. And the only impacts to the wetlands would just be this crossing of this road here. And that's been made to be a minimum width of 16 feet. Our normal street width would be, 33 feet wide and that kind of thing. Just it's probably cost prohibitive, and it probably wouldn't be approved by the wetland folks either. Just that amount of fill for this few number of lots probably would not be approved. So we are sort of suggesting that a 16-foot wide crossing would be okay with this wider portion here to kind of pull a fire engine in there, park it, and still be able to get people out. So obviously you don't want to have a fire engine come park on the driveway and then nobody can get out out of the way of the fire, right? Plus you might want to need an ambulance back there, all that kind of stuff, right? So you want to have an area for a fire engine to sit, fight a fire, and still have people be able to get around it. So we're working with the applicant on that. Then there would also be a hydrant that would be pulled back so the water main is stubbed out right here. Again, because we always knew this was part of the plan. And a hydrant would be placed kind of right in this general region here, right, kind of in lot three area there. And then that would be perfect. The fire engine sits next to the hydrant, hooks to that, and then run hoses from there. So we've looked at this with our fire chief, and our fire department's kind of given the okay for this to move forward with these modifications. So again, we have four lots here. From a zoning perspective, this would all meet the R2A zoning because there's 80 foot of frontage on each one of these. So if you look here, there's more than 80 feet right there. Then there's a chunk here of 80 feet, a chunk here of 80 feet or so, and then a chunk here of, again, more than 80 feet. So each one of these lots would meet the lot width requirement. It would meet the overall size of the lot by a long shot, and it meets all the setbacks and those type of things. Notably, there is an easement here on the east side of these three lots, which runs north and south. That is for the power lines that run through there. And I know the applicant has talked with the power company about what can and cannot be done on that easement. And it sounds like they're very comfortable with being able to sell these lots and have that as still usable space for people. I don't know that you can build the home. As you can see, the home plots are outside that area, but I think small accessory structures and that type of thing can likely be built there. So this is the proposal, and the applicant is here if you'd like to talk to him at all about any of the aspects of this. Otherwise, we could answer any questions.
Mark, the red line there, that would become a city street?
It would not, no, it would be a private drive.
Okay.
Yep. And one of the things we would do that is, was not done in Old Mill Estates first and second edition is we would require a developer's agreement, excuse me, a homeowners association.
Oh, yeah.
So you'd have an agreement between these three, maybe four properties, depending on how we worked it, probably just the three, that would be in a homeowners association to maintain that driveway. And that would be something I would encourage you to stick to, because without that, it's chaos. I've been a part of these shared driveway easement things for on many a different occasion with when I was a consultant, when we had large lot developments in townships and stuff where that was common to share a driveway. Well, you know, you get a handshake agreement. One guy says, well, we'll plow it. And then 10 years goes by and he stops plowing it. And this guy doesn't like how he's plowing it. He always ruts up my grass. And, you know, it explodes into a family feud very quickly. And it pretty soon the city or township gets caught in the middle trying to, well, if someone's got to plow, we got to go get an ambulance to your door, you know, that kind of thing. So, it would be a private drive, but it would be easements defined for all three, recorded against the properties, and a homeowners association established that kind of had a clause in there that usually what we look at with that is some sort of clause that if the homeowners association fails for some reason, it reverts power to the city so that we can go in and, you know, hire someone to plow it or, you know, fix potholes or whatever it would happen to be, just to maintain our emergency access, right? But otherwise, it would be in the best interest of the three parties to keep that association going and that kind of thing, so.
Well, I was on the board when this first came through, but you three weren't. Do you guys have any questions for the applicant?
I do not.
Do you think we can just make a recommendation?
Yeah, so with this being a sketch plan, there's no need for any formal action. any comments you have are fine. Otherwise, if everything looks good to you, then head nods are good for Todd.
Getting well, like a thumbs up or something?
We're good.
Yeah, I think we're good.
We'll come back from where we
left. Very good.
Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Thank you.
Next on the agenda is to accept the resignation of Commissioner Broussard Vickers.
Yes, Mr. Chair. You know, when Linda kind of rejoined our committee, which, you know, she was on a number of years ago, and, you know, saw an opening on the committee again, and this is, a year ago or so, you know, just kind of told us, hey, I'm filling a hole here because I know I've done this before and I know I can do it, but I don't want to stand in the way of new blood getting in here. And so she was kind enough to kind of give us that if there was other folks that stepped forward, she'd be willing to step down. Also, she's, you know, been snowbirding it a little bit, so she finds it a little bit more difficult to fulfill her duties over the winter months when she's south of the border, not south of the border, but south of us here. So, I told her that we had a number of interested candidates, and she was more than happy to step down and make way for those folks. And again, just acknowledge that she enjoys serving and hopes that we get into some new folks in here and can have a good full committee. So
she sort of kind of did this last year.
Yeah, I think something, maybe a year and a half ago or something, right? Yeah. So,
can we get a motion to accept the resignation of Linda Broussard Vickers?
I'll make that a motion.
Good. I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Just a thank you to her.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for many, many
years
of service.
We enjoyed her because she was such a, she had the depth, the knowledge, the background knowledge of that.
Yeah, I'm going to miss her on here.
Yeah.
All in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion carries. Next, we have recommendation to City Council on candidates for open positions.
Yeah, so, Mr. Chair, we had our opportunity to interview the three candidates, as we mentioned. Mr. Weatherhead withdrew his application and was happy that we had some very qualified candidates. So you have three candidates to choose from for two open positions. And, you know, I think I'll speak for the group when we say that we had three wonderful candidates, all of whom we were very excited to try to find room for them. But unfortunately, there's only two available spots. So with that, you can either engage in any further discussion you'd like to have, or someone makes a motion to make their recommended appointments.
Mr. Chair, if you don't mind, I'd like to make a motion, and then we can open up for discussion.
Sure.
After that. I'd like to move that we select Jeannie Sepala and Matthew McCabe for the two vacant positions on the Centerville Planning and Zoning Committee.
Is there any further discussion?
Mr. Chair, we should try to find a second first.
Oh, sure.
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
Well, that should, I think, explain why I support both these. In the interview process, I found them both to be the superior candidates, especially Jeannie talked about her analytical thinking and gave some pretty good examples that I found to be very impressive. With respect to Matt, I thought he had a great answer when he explained why it is he moved to Centerville, but more importantly for me is on question number three, when we talked about what steps he'd go through as a commissioner to make decisions, he brought up the fact that he's gone out and looked at the League of Minnesota Cities website as a resource, which I thought was very interesting. Somebody who took the initiative to go to a resource like that to kind of research some of the things that a board like this does, I thought was rather impressive.
Well, I'd like to make a comment. I think we have been unusually available of three very qualified candidates here, and I think that needs to be said.
Agreed.
Agreed.
And unfortunately, we have two positions, and I don't think this should reflect anybody else. I mean, this, you know, NASCAR just had three cars that ended up within 7/1000ths of a second, and I kind of feel like I think we're kind of in this area here, and I think we need to make sure that we continue to encourage people to be involved, because we certainly need it, we will in years in the future, and I want to make sure that that's on the record.
Well said. So we got two motions.
You have one motion with a second.
Yep. So all in favor of these Jeannie and Matthew being accepted to the Planning and Zoning Commission, say aye.
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 Aye. All opposed? Motion carries.
Very good.
So next we have approval of minutes. Did anybody see anything on the minutes that they wanted to discuss or change? Or did they look good to everybody? I thought everything looked fine, but
yeah.
I didn't see anything either, did you?
No. I had one question. Actually, this comes back to Linda. When I initially came on, there were several previous minutes that needed to be approved, and she told me that I should abstain from that because I was not at the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Would this apply here?
So there's no legal need for you to abstain from minutes of a meeting that you weren't in attendance at. That being said, often people do because they feel weird about voting on something that they didn't attend, and so how could they, you know, say that these meeting minutes are correct, but there's nothing, you don't have to worry about illegality. A lot of people, again, do abstain, you know, so in this case, if Mr. Thompson wanted to abstain because he was absent from this meeting, he certainly could. He could certainly vote for or against them too, it doesn't matter.
Okay, well, it's just a common practice, is all.
Yep.
That past advice.
Yep.
Anybody want to make a motion for these approval of the February 6th, 2024 meeting minutes?
I'll make the motion to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Oh, sorry. Oh, all opposed? Motion carries.
Mr. Thompson, should we mark you abstained or?
Abstained, please, thank you.
And that, Bruce, that's just going back to what Linda advised me. And I did listen.
Announcements. Councilmember Liaison Russ Koski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I really don't have a whole lot except for I'm gonna be a repetitive, kind of a broken record thing, but thank you again to Linda for stepping in and stepping up, and she's done it a time or two, and a lot of years of service in the city, and very much appreciated her knowledge and everything, and her skill is she's just great to have around, so I wish her well, and so thank you again, Linda. And then I just wanted to comment too on our candidates tonight. All three of them, excellent. You know, and it's interesting, we've had two open seats for a while, and if somebody would have come around 2-3 months ago and have filled one of those seats, right? So all three of them, and it's difficult, I think, and I've been in that position too, where you have to choose. And it's tough. So I just wanted to thank all three of them. And Mr. Peterson is still here, and thank you, and keep your eyes and ears open.
Yes, Gordon, thank you.
You know, things happen, and we've got the EDA also, so there's a lot of things going on. Our parade, our Fête de l'Ox parade in the summertime, we always need help with that, and sometimes somebody to run that, and that's great on a resume too. So anyway, and that's really all I had, so thank you to everyone, and thanks to this group as always.
Thanks,
DJ, for filling in on this short notice.
I kind of just fumbled along.
You're doing just great.
Next, administrative report, Mark.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, just a couple quick highlights. This week, Thursday, I believe, I'll be headed down with a couple city council members, including our junior council member, to what's called the League of Minnesota Cities Day on the City Day on the Hill, where we get to engage with some of our legislators on making sure they understand issues that are important to cities. And, you know, oftentimes those things are sort of forgotten, is that legislators sometimes forget that their constituents are members of various cities as well, and that we have interests as well, and kind of our own special interest group in a certain way, right? And when you think about all the things that influence our legislators, want to make sure that our voice is heard as well. So we're going to go down there and let them know what we think, and you know, get to experience some of that. So it'll be a fun experience for everybody. Early voting is still open. It's actually tomorrow is very interesting. Tomorrow is election day for the presidential nomination primary. We were open today until 5 o'clock, which was required. And then tomorrow we will be open here from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. But also, you can go to St. Genevieve's Church, where the polling place is. That's where you're supposed to go to cast your ballot. But we will be here to accept absentee ballots until 8 p.m., just as long as the polls are open. So that's a kind of a new thing this year. So you can pick where you want to be, but if you want to do the normal, put the ballot in the box, that is over at St. Genevieve's Church, our normal voting place. So everyone get out and vote tomorrow. This Met Council State of the Region, if someone was interested in going to that, it's open to the public and or other, you know, city officials and that kind of thing. If someone wants to go, let us know. We can get you signed up for that. It's sort of their State of the City, State of the Met Council address. And I think it'll be an interesting program. I don't know if this is the first time they've done this, or I don't get a sense that they've done this real often before. So I'm interested to see what this is going to be all about. So use city plow, very important topic here, Imperial Patria. Hoping to name our second plow next year. We got a second big plow truck that we'll try to name next year.
So right now we only have one
no,
plow?
We do have two big plows, just one's not named. You may have heard some about this, but Anoka County is redoing the road into their park. And that project will kick off here fairly soon. They had an open house recently to discuss that, but there's more information on the website and that kind of thing, just about scheduling and logistics there. So
that road is tough.
Yeah,
that's very tough.
Yeah, that's why they're redoing it.
Mark, I attended the meeting mainly because we wanted to make sure that the coordination of the alum treatment for the lake was being done with the county and with the contractor. The contractor hasn't been brought on board yet, but that Danielle from the county said they've had people from the Water and Conservation District involved in their meetings and discussions, and so they're not anticipating it's going to be a problem. So.
Yep. Yeah, and I've actually talked with Rice Creek about alternate locations if this just can't be done here. Other alternatives are Hidden Spring Park and the adjacent property, which is owned by the St. Paul Regional Water System. They have a much better driveway down to the lake there, although we've discussed it with the Watershed District, and Hidden Spring Park could be an option. Obviously, we don't want to, run it up or anything like that, but we'll be very cautious there. But they're working on multiple options in case this one doesn't work out. But, for the short time span that this, it'll be just a couple days with that alum treatment, I think we'll be able to accommodate them through this.
Good. I'm glad to hear that you're involved in that as well.
Yeah, yep, definitely. So, because we don't want to miss our window with the alum treatment for sure. And if folks didn't hear, the Watershed District did get a grant for almost $1 million to do an alum treatment on Centerville Lake. If you don't know what alum is, it's a chemical that allows phosphorus to kind of bind together and then sink to the bottom, and hopefully it'll stay there for a good 20 years or so. And so it's a great opportunity for us to, the effect on the lake will be immediate, and the lake will be,
Should be a lot
clearer. And all you got to do now is wait for the weeds to come up, because it'll be so clear that it'll grow more weeds. But that's the trade-off we're all going to make, and I think it's going to be a good one. Because,
it's more fish habitat, right?
Yeah, and it's safe. It was getting to the point where we have algae blooms that were really unsafe. So, one thing I want to highlight, we mentioned, I think maybe earlier in the meeting or in the workshop, that we do have a city open house, kind of town hall type meeting on March 25th, that's a Monday, and we're going to be right here in this chambers from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. We'll be having some kind of poster boards and information on various topics, one of which will be the Lalonde apartment proposal, so we'll have a lot of information on that, so please come out to chat with us about that, learn all about that project, and give us your input. And then we also will have information on a variety of other topics around the city. We kind of wanted to make it just a town hall meeting. Most of the city council members, I think, will be here at least at some point during that meeting cycle, during that time frame. We'll have people representing the developer. We'll have people from city staff. Lots of resources here for you to come and chat with. And then the next day, the Tuesday, March 26th, we have an open house for the County 54 or 20th Avenue Corridor Study. That's also a very important project that we're working on to kind of understand the future of how that whole corridor will lay out. So two very important input sessions that we want people to attend if we can. So again, Monday and Tuesday, the 25th and 26th of March here at City Hall.
And what are the times on those again?
The 25th is from 5 to 8 for the town hall. And the 26th is from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. for the corridor study.
Mark?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I thought I saw something in an email come out that 6 o'clock for the meeting here, or town hall.
I believe it's 5 to 8 is what we're going to be.
Originally we talked 5 to 8, but I thought there was the invite said 6. Can you double check that?
We will double check that.
Yeah, thank you. I'll certainly do that.
How many people are planning on attending the Met Council, I think I'll go.
I'm not aware of anyone else that's attending at this point, so.
Says 5 to 8.
It does, huh? Okay, thank you.
9 a.m. to 11:30 on a Friday?
The Met Council.
Met Council, yeah.
So then just a couple of the things to highlight, the Lalonde project, we've been working closely with the developer on a number of different issues, trying to make sure that we have adequate fire access around the building. A couple other things just with their plan in general. You know, by the time the 25th rolls around, they will have a little bit better sketch plan. You know, and if you give me just a second, I will pull up the most recent thing that they sent to us, which gives us a little bit better idea of what they're thinking in terms of their architecture. This is an updated rendering just showing some of the little bit of architectural treatments they're looking at. So that roof line there is a very specific nod to the old Centerville school. And so they've got some images of an old school that was right across Main Street, so kind of where Cornerstone Park is today. There used to be a school there up until the 50s or so. I believe there was a fire in 59 or about about there. So it was an old school that survived for many years, and you know, their thought is being right next to the elementary school that they wanted to give a nod to the history of schools in the area and the Centerville school. So that roof line there, that the gabled roof on the corner there, is a nod to that. You know, this is not the end of all the architecture discussion, but I thought it was interesting to show with that they are looking at some of those things and doing some research on how to you know, again, have some historic texture and context to their buildings. So this is, you know, kind of looking from the school parking lot, you know, the corner of Westview and Centerville Road.
So it appears they're going looking at a flat roof.
They are.
That'll keep the height down.
Yep.
That'll keep the height down.
Yeah, the overall height of the building. Yeah. Versus, yeah. And again, this is the view from the sort of the southeast side. So obviously the view from the west side will be, you'll see that additional story of underground parking will be a little bit more exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the, you know, the side of the building that has that exposed will be there. So I could just quick grab the other sort of more recent renderings here. So this just gives you an idea. This is the garage floor. This is sort of the first floor. Kind of gives you a little bit better idea of the patio set up. There, kind of a tiered system of patios. This will be kind of the upper tier here, and then there's stairs down to this lower area here where I think there's our fire pits down here, and then sort of a third tier down here at more at ground level with some kind of picnic type areas and that kind of thing. So just kind of, you know, not a whole lot different than what you've seen before, but just a little bit more detail on what they're looking at there.
I find their paths quite interesting. They go out to really nowhere because there's no sidewalk on that side of the street.
And I think that's an architect, you know, getting crazy without thinking about what he's connecting to, or he or she. So, yeah, that'll be part of the conversation is, are those paths going anywhere? What do we think about that? Unfortunately, the concept right now still does have this parking down here. Trying to work through different options with them about whether or not that is a possibility. Notably, we are not showing, you know, Westview going through and intersecting with Main Street at this point in time. It's still a possibility that we look at, you know, whether that's a right out type of situation to alleviate some issues at Main Street and Centerville Road.
The right out only, no turn in.
Right, right. I should say correct. But yeah, you know, I think along with this project, we're going to need a traffic study that is going to explain, you know, whether or not that is needed or whether it would help at all or those type of things. So, you know, you could put that there and then nobody uses it. That wasn't a very good use of resources or, you know, intersection on the road. So have to evaluate some of that and take a look at what are our options there. So just to be clear, what we were talking with the fire department about is whether or not there should be a fire lane on the north side of the building here. Obviously, you can see that's kind of squeezed tightly there. But if you look at their garage plan, it looks like there's a bit more room there. And I think that's some of that's balcony, some of that's architectural cantilever type stuff that's going on there that we're working through with them to make sure that there'll be enough of an access there to either have an egress here so we can at least get firefighters in here to fight a fire. You know, let's say there's a fire right at the entrance. We want to be able to get in and not go through that entrance or have people get out here, have a, you know, a path that would be cleared of snow and that kind of thing, up to and including maybe an actual fire lane, a drivable fire lane. So it may not get to that point where we actually have a drivable fire lane there, but we're working through that with them in terms of points of egress and just a firefighting strategy in general here. So obviously the building is sprinklered, so that takes away a lot of the major concern about, you know, having a fire lane 360 degrees around the building and stuff. Don't always need that. So we'll look at that, and we have been looking at that with our fire department on what's appropriate there. So any other kind of questions just on the progression of the Lalonde proposal here?
When is the traffic study done?
So that's a great question, Richard. we've been talking with them about it. They're a bit hesitant to just jump into that. It's costly, and it's one of those things that you don't get your money back on if the project doesn't move forward. But we do feel like it is probably a valuable piece of information to have, you know, to share with the public as soon as we can. So we're talking with them. Our ability to like really compel them to do it, unfortunately, isn't necessarily there until they make a formal application and we say this is a requirement of getting through preliminary plat. So it may have to wait until then. But I don't see a way that we go through this process without a traffic study. My gut will tell you is that as an engineer, that the traffic study isn't going to say a whole lot. It's going to say, yep, that intersection can do this just fine, because it's just not that much traffic. I know 600 to 700 trips a day sounds like a lot, but it's just not. It's a four-way intersection can handle way more than that. And but it doesn't mean that the public, I mean, we've heard from a number of people in the public, we're cataloging those. Almost every person that's commented has mentioned something about traffic, right? So I don't know how we go forward with a straight face to the public and say, you know, here's your development, now we don't need a traffic study, because everyone is asking about traffic. And, you know, I can sit here all day until I'm blue in the face and say, don't worry about it, but until you sort of put a more formal stamp on it and say, here's the numbers, here's the criteria, look, it's not that big a deal, you know, in a more eloquent way than I just did, I think it's going to be problematic. And I think I'm in full support of demanding that and requiring that, and it's something they should be ready to do. So,
well, that seems to be a top of a lot of people's agenda, particularly with, which was a surprise, is getting out of school as opposed to just getting into school. And I hadn't thought about that, but apparently that's on people's minds. I think it has to do with going to school is pretty much, seems to be pretty well fine timeline, but getting out doesn't seem to be that.
Yeah, so, you know, but I just want to say, you know, we're very actively engaged with the developer at this point in time. They are making progress towards more refined plans, and we're hopeful that we'll have a lot of good information for the folks at the open house and be able to hear a lot of good input from people, so.
There was talk about the noise level on top of the patio. Did they ever talk, the developers ever talk about that?
So we haven't really talked about it, but one thing I think maybe a misconception is that I think people may think the spot for the patio might be like here, you know? I've seen it on buildings like that, right? But really the spot is right here. And so it's like in the middle, it'll be surrounded on three sides by building. And so the only noise would be coming out towards the lake, right? So it's not gonna be something that I think that any neighbor will have any possibility that they'll hear noise on that patio. It's just not gonna be, again, I could certainly see a concern if there was a outdoor patio right here, open to the world, but it's really gonna be on the interior of the interior. I mean, on the inside half of the inside of that C shape, so I think it'll be quite private, really. Anything else anyone wanted to chat about?
If I might, Mr. Chair, in a patio like that, Mark, it's not just noise, right, for the neighbors, but how do you control the noise going into the interior of the building?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something they're going to manage. I think the outdoor patio space, I think, might even be more of a concern as opposed to, I should say, the at-grade space on the first level. What we're talking about is kind of a rooftop deck. You know, that that noise, I think, will pale in comparison, I think, to the noise of the patio out front. I think just because of the size of this space here, you're really not going to be able to have a super large gathering. I think it's going to be for pretty intimate, you know, 20 people or so type gatherings. It's not going to be 100 people getting in that space is what I can see from their design. So I'll just show you the third floor plan here. So I believe it's just these two spaces here that would be combined for that. I think there's an indoor portion of that and an outdoor portion of that. So these two are combined as a community room, right? So I think that this part here that my cursor's on now is the indoor spot, and then this is the outdoor patio attached to that. So you could kind of like it's almost like a suite at a hockey game or something, right? You get sort of the inside part and then the outside part. Okay. Yeah, it's, they're very popular now. I think most apartment buildings are built with them as part of the normal course of business. I don't think most places would build them without an amenity like that, especially something that's going to be a little higher end and have the views of the lake and stuff like that. So, other than that, have had some interest again in Block 7. Nothing real formal at this point in time. Did get a call from the developer or the proposed developer of the what was known as Peltier Estates, which is the 19 acres in the far northeast part of town, north of the former Robin Moore property. Sounds like they'd like to get going on that development. I've not heard anything from them since that initial phone call, but in all likelihood it would come back as the same design that was presented. Are you going on 5-6 years now?
That's just north of that single-family home that they're rehabbing?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. And so it's a narrow bit of upland there. A lot of it's wetland. They were looking at 24 detached townhomes on that development. So, and that's Sharper Homes is the one that's proposing that. So we'll be looking for a formal application from them. We'll probably move right on to the preliminary plat with them, and should be able to, if nothing has changed, hopefully that moves through fairly quickly and can't imagine there'll be a lot of controversy there. So,
That block 3-1, that's the one that was
gonna be
just south of the, yeah, by the school, just south of the old creamery?
Correct. So we did have a restaurant owner that has expressed interest in that site. Again, just haven't heard anything since that initial conversation, but hopefully we can get something moving there, so. Any other questions on anything going on around town?
Mark, anything on, if I may, Mr. Chair, anything on 20th and Main, the northeast corner there?
Unfortunately, no. I mean, again, you know, we had some initial conversations. We know that things were happening. I do know that there's a an agreement, sort of a right of first refusal or a purchase agreement type of agreement that the current realtor and broker has with another real estate holding company, I guess I'll call it. So there was a holding company that had a purchase agreement with the property owner there. I don't know what the status of that is at this point. They had a couple of concepts. They were looking at multiple retailers on that same site. Some nice amenities I'm hopeful for and still am hopeful for, but no news at this point in time, so.
Were they good amenities or bad amenities?
You know, I'll just share that one of the concepts was a grocer, a small footprint grocer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the amenities or one of the businesses was a quick lube place. One was a daycare, and one was a coffee. So I won't tell you what combination, I can't recall, not trying to be submersive, but there were two concepts with a mix of those two.
Mm-hmm.
The daycare and the grocer were the sort of the anchor tenants, and I can't remember which of the coffee and the quick lube were with the other one, but there was a combination of those. So looks like it's enough of a site to fit the anchor tenant plus a little something else.
I suppose you heard that Culver's was coming in over here.
I did. Yeah, across the highway and
Lino.
Yeah. So. That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
I guess the only thing left to do is to adjourn the evening. Anything special for adjournment?
Just need a motion and a second, and
okay.
I'll vote.
Who wants to make a motion?
I'll motion to adjourn the meeting.
Who wants to make a
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye. Oops, I'll pause now. That's over.